accession number 18772, reel 6.
I was at battalion headquarters at this stage, and the motor transport section detailed a driver throughout the night who would get into the vehicles, start them up, drive forward about 10 yards, reverse for another 10 yards and back to the original starting place. And then he'd go down the whole line of 3-ton trucks and 1,500 weights throughout the night in order to keep the oil in the back axles and gearboxes in a fluid state, because really, yeah, the wind had to be experienced to be understood what it was all about. This is why I can sympathise with colleagues who I know, you know, who were in the evacuation from the chosen reservoir where ice and frost and snow and wind made their lives a sheer misery. We weren't so bad if we could get out of the wind, but the wind was the problem. Having said that, the frost really, really was severe. Without the wind chill factor, we would probably have temperatures as low as 10 or 8 Fahrenheit. But the wind chill factors are used to drop in well below low zero. Things changed a lot, of course, when the Korean winter came to an end. And I can recall being in our final divisional reserve positions before we moved out from the battle area to Britannia Camp, where in a space of about 5 weeks we cast off our winter clothing and we were walking around in the battalion area stripped to the waist because the sun was so hot. So Korea really was a country of extremes. One of the methods that we used to use in fairly static positions of heating was a very, very dangerous manoeuvre known as a drip feed jerry can. And what we would do would be to punch holes in a laid flat jerry can and feed in from a petrol can outside the dugout or what have you, a tube that used to drip into the can. And once it was ignited, the steady drip, drip, drip kept the petrol flowing around the base of the can and gave us a certain amount of warmth. All too often, unfortunately, these things went wrong. And I remember on one occasion when we were actually in the line, the signal office was a dugout cut into the side of the hill. And Alec Pick, who was the signal clerk on duty, for some reason upset the flow of petrol into the jerry can, and the whole of the interior of the signal office was erupted into flames. And Alec barely escaped with his life, and even to this day he still suffers the disabilities created by his burns. He was evacuated to a Norwegian MASH, and I went to see him the day after the incident, and he was a very, very, very poorly man. He wasn't expected to live, but the doctors and nurses at Norwegian MASH did an extremely splendid job on him and pulled him together sufficiently for him to be transferred to British Military Hospital in Kure. But Alec has been a cripple from that day forth. But you see, it was the serious attempts that we used to take in order to try and keep warm. It's something going out in the cold and knowing you can come into a home with warmth and a bath or a shower where you can sit down in front of the fire. But I out in the field there, particularly when you were in the line, when lights were absolutely forbidden, you just had to grit your teeth and keep warm best way you can. Fortunately, after the bitter experience of the first winter by the Argylls and the Middlesex, who had no appropriate winter clothing, the clothing manufacturers through the War Office in the United Kingdom did devise a sort of ad hoc type of winter clothing, which was a sort of a nylon woven material that was supposedly, and I think it really did work to a point, windproof, which together with the long johns and the string vests and the combat boots and the thick socks and the parkas and the hoods that we used to wear did affect a certain degree of comfort. At least they kept the wind off us. But on those exposed parts of the body, the face and the nose, my goodness me, it really, really was cold. And I'm sure that any serviceman who's been through a Korean winter will share my views on the intensity of the cold, where the ground is so frozen that it cannot be dug. And virtually, if you want to dig a hole, you've got to sort of blast your way with explosives. But there you are. We all came through it. I sometimes marvel in the days of modern hygiene conditions, you know, how on earth we survived, or how any serviceman in any theatre of war throughout the years has survived, you know, with the unhygienic conditions under which food has to be prepared. You go to the makeshift latrine, and there's no question of washing your hands, you know, because the facilities aren't there. I remember going to the bath unit on one occasion with some members of my platoon, having my clothes taken off me and deloused. I have never been so humiliated in all my life when the Royal Engineers Corporal came back and I found my clothes dusted with some white powder. So I said to him, "What's this? Delousing powder," he says. I thought, oh my goodness me, how have human beings come down to this? But there you are. I'm going to say, it's a hard fact of life that if you are in those conditions, then you cannot expect to have a bath every day and have a nice warm fire and have a hot meal waiting on the table. You know, it's a condition of service, you know, and I can't recall any serviceman within my hearing who complained about the conditions, because, you know, the bottom line of all this thing is that it's a question of dedication, commitment, and loyalty to whatever it is you feel that needs to be done.